good to see y'all out this morning. We will continue on for a few more weeks until we start our fall campaign in the book of John. Then we'll come back to that again afterwards. There's so much in there. And from week to week, if you miss and you want to hear it, it's still on the internet because we kind of build each week on what was before, just because we're looking at it paragraph by paragraph. So that is where we continue on this morning as we look at John chapter 4, a continuation of that, where he is, remember last week he was talking with the lady at the well in Samaria, and we picked that up where he's left there, traveled 2 days, and he's come back to Galilee. Remember, Galilee is north. He's been in Judea. He's leaving Judea. He's going north to Galilee, and he goes through Samaria. And remember, he started off in Cana of Galilee in chapter 1. You remember where he goes through, or chapter 2? And he does his first miracle there when he's entering into his public ministry. He does, what did he do in Cana of Galilee? What was his first miracle, you remember? He changed the water to wine, and now he comes back to Cana, and he does the second miracle. These are the only ones that John mentions. He does other miracles in Galilee that you see through the other Gospels, but these are the only two that John mentions. And I don't think that's by chance that he does that. So what he deals with here is different levels or different criteria that people seem to demand if they're going to trust Christ. And that's what we're going to look at. Alexander McLaren, a great preacher in the 18 and 1900s. If you ever get a chance to pick up anything that he's done or read it, read it. It was back before all of the liberal influence. And a great preacher. And one morning he stepped up to his pulpit and he saw out there who was a well-known skeptic. And so he talked to him afterwards. He said, you know, I wish you would come back for the next 4 Sundays because the series we're doing, you know, might help you in your questions that you have. Because he knew he was a skeptic. Sure enough, he came back, and at the end, he became a believer. The skeptic did. And so he asked him, Alexander McLaren asked him, he said, which one of the sermons dealt with your issue, and how did you become a believer? Which one was it? He said, none of them. He said, one of the Sundays after I left, I was walking out, and I saw this elderly lady who was having a hard time on the ice, and I got to talking with her, and she had a warm, friendly smile on her face, so I helped her off the street, and she started talking to me about, asked me, did I know her Jesus? And in that conversation, he said, when I got home, I knelt down on my knees and prayed to receive Christ. So it wasn't some great debate that Alexander McLaren, as bright as he is, was throughout there. It was an issue that actually we look at today. You know, different people seem to demand something and say, you know, I'm only going to believe Jesus when I understand this. You know, I only believe in God when somebody explains how the world came into being. You know, there's always that. Can you imagine what it had been like when God called Abram? You know, what did he do? He said, I want you to go over to a place. I'm even not even going to tell you where it is yet. I just want you to leave. Remember, that's what he said, right? He says, go over that way, and as you go, I'll tell you. What did he do? How did he react? He said he believed God. You know, and remember now what happens. Well, let's go ahead, and I won't get ahead of myself, because that's exactly what it is. Different levels of people will demand something if they're going to believe Christ, and a lot of times Christ doesn't do it, so they don't believe. What does your faith demand? Between the reaction of the Samaritans that we saw last week and those in Galilee, Jesus challenges us to evaluate, you know, what does it take for us before we really commit ourselves to Him? Are we waiting for, you know, as we're going to see in this, are we waiting and say, okay, God, if you heal, if you remember God's Not Dead, the first one? You remember what happened? Remember what threw that skeptic off? Because God didn't heal his mother who was sick whenever he was a boy, so he turned against him and only came back at the end. You know, and a lot of times that's the way people operate. Well, God, if you don't do this, then I'm not going to believe in you. Then you won't believe in him. Because he doesn't just go by what we think has to be there. And that's exactly what we see. In verses here, we're going to look quickly. John chapter 4, it says, "And after 2 days, he departed from there. He was in Samaria." Remember we saw, and he stayed there, and he shared with them, and it said, "Many believed, not because of the Samaritan woman, but because they believed Jesus was the Christ." So he stayed there 2 days, and now he goes on. He's leaving Samaria, which is the middle. Judea's down here. Samaria's in the middle, and Galilee's up north. And for Jesus himself testified, this is a very, very interesting verse in here, and a lot of people are always trying to say, what does this mean? Because in sandwiched in between this narrative, John throws in there, and Jesus said, a prophet has no honor in his own homeland. He's not welcome in his own country. And it's amazing. You got to remember, he did those miracles in Galilee, quite a few of them, as we'll relate to in a moment in Matthew chapter 11. But the majority of the people did not believe him in Galilee. So he's gone for some time. Now he comes back. I think that's what it means. You know, some people say, oh, well, they didn't know. It was after they didn't receive him that he makes his statement. And he comes back and he says, because he's not welcome in his own homeland. So when he came to Galilee, the Galileans welcomed him. Before they didn't. Now they are. Because they have seen all the things he had done in Jerusalem. Remember up there when he cleared the temple? We saw all that between chapter 1 and where we are now. At the feast, for they themselves had come to the feast. Now he came again to Cana, same place he did his first miracle. In Galilee, where he had made the water wine, and there was at Capernaum, about 20 miles from Cana was Capernaum, a certain royal official whose son was sick. This man, when he heard that Jesus had come from Judea and Galilee, went to him and asked that he would come down and heal his son, for he was about to die. So Jesus said to him, unless you people, we'll allude to this in just a moment, but this is a plural verb in the Greek New Testament. It's singular in English, but he's not just talking to this man. He says, really, he's saying y'all. He says, unless y'all, and it is not just the man, but I think that everybody in that surrounding area of Galilee especially, and even to the royal officials who would had been in Herod's household in that regimen, were not believers. He says, unless all of y'all see signs and wonders, you'll not believe. Unless God does something supernatural, you say you're not going to believe. The royal official said to him, sir, come down before my child dies. He kind of sidetracked. He said, well, I don't know about all that. I just need you to come down and hear my son. All right? Jesus said to him, go, your son will live. So the man believed the word that Jesus spoke to him, and he departed. Now, as he was going down, his slaves met him, saying that the child was alive. So he inquired from them the hour at which he had gotten better. And then they said to him, yesterday, at the seventh hour, the fever left him. So the father knew it was that same hour which Jesus had said to him, your son, actually it translates, your son is living. That's what Jesus told him in the prior. He didn't say he will live. He said, your son's alive now. Your son's living. He's going to be there. And he himself believed and his whole household. Okay. Now remember, Jesus' return to Galilee shows us the different levels of what people demand before they will commit to him. We saw the Samaritans, we see the Galileans, and now we're going to see it again. He reveals those different types. So he came again to Cana of Galilee, and he was up there doing a lot of miracles. Like we say, if you go back and look at the Gospels, it lists a lot of miracles that John doesn't list, okay? And we know some believed on him because in 1 Corinthians, whenever he was resurrected, it says there were 500 in Galilee that was believers. Okay, but that's only a fraction of what had seen him and what he had been ministered to that whole time. He made the watered wine, and there was a certain nobleman. He was of the royal lineage. He either worked for Herod or he was in that class of people. He wasn't just a normal person, but he comes and he's traveling 20 miles from Capernaum up to Cana where Jesus is because he hears he's coming. Okay. He began his ministry in Galilee, but as attested in Matthew 11, as a whole, they didn't receive him. And now he returns and more receive him than they did the first time, all right? And I put a couple of these verses in there that are not in your handout. If you want to jot those down, I should have put them in there, but I forgot. In Matthew 11, it says, but I say unto you, Jesus is speaking, that it shall be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon in the day of judgment than for you. He's talking to Capernaum. He's there speaking to him. And thou, Capernaum, which are exalted unto heaven, shall be brought down to hell. For if the mighty works which have been done, if the miracles that I did in your presence would have been done in Sodom, they would have turned. So what does that tell us? The majority of people didn't believe in him. So he leaves. Isn't that kind of amazing? That, you know, when we're getting somebody to do our speaking, for some reason we always have to go outside. Because nobody in-house is capable. Whenever you need a preacher, you go up somewhere where they're not even the same. It's kind of crazy to me how we got so many northern preachers in the south. It just doesn't work that well. Or how many southern preachers you got in the north. You know, vice versa. It just blows my mind. Why? There's something that he's talking about here. Until you go off and prove yourself, nobody want to hear you. Isn't that right? Isn't that right? That is. And you bring somebody in and they're all this renowned, and you're saying, my goodness, he couldn't preach himself out of a paper bag. And that's exactly what's going on. He said, I was there and you didn't receive me. Now I've come back because, and now there it says, and they welcomed him. They were, because they did not. You know, they didn't. It's amazing. For Jesus himself testified that a prophet has no honor in his own country. That's an amazing thing. You know, that it still blows my mind. We know a situation pretty close to us where somebody in-house can do a very, very good job. That's what they need. But there, a few of the people are just settled on going somewhere out there and getting somebody else. And you lose a lot. Why? Because you're missing somebody that already has a vested interest in it. You know, it's amazing. And one of the guys on this pulpit committee has enough sense to know. He says, listen, I have enough sense to know that you can't listen to a preacher one time and make a good decision on whether he's the right person or not. And they miss it. But this is a picture of what happened. He's there preaching. They wouldn't listen to him. He goes off and does all kinds of things. Come back. And now it says they welcome him. I don't understand that. But that's how we are. Right? Doesn't mean that you don't understand something. The fact is, it's still reality, right? It's hard to gain acceptance and recognition in your own town, but if you make a hit somewhere else and come back, they look at you differently. Same thing with kids, I guess. Now, what happened to the Samaritans? What was their perspective? We saw it in the verses from last week. Whenever Jesus started talking to her, she believed he was the Christ. And then what happens after that? The Samaritans believed. They believed in him because he was a Christ. They didn't ask for a sign. They were not like, how many times when Jesus was there? Well, you need to prove to us who you are before we're going to believe it. That's not what they said. They believed him. They believed him as the Christ. They, in order to place their faith, they didn't say, well, you got to heal my child first. Or you got to, his own disciple says, you need to call down fire from heaven on these people. You know, somebody was always looking for him to prove himself. You know, in our past, there's always been some people. And it's a lot of times, it's people that appear to be more intellectual, but God doesn't call them intellectuals. He calls them fools. What does it say? It says, the fool hath said in his heart, there is what? No God. When a simple person says, you know, I don't have to have a lot of sign. I believe that. So I believe the smart people are the simple ones and the fools are the more complicated ones that tend to be. And what do you have? Most of your atheistic type people are what? Somebody who's looking for somebody to prove something. Well, you got to prove this, then they're never going to believe. It's amazing, especially the new atheism that has arisen. Now, let's move from that. You see, a faith that doesn't demand anything, who says, okay, we're going to take you at your word, and you know, that's pretty tough. I was reading a situation that happened back in World War II. It was on a submarine called Sea Dragon. Any of you submarine historians buffs in here? What happened was, what do you call them, like a seaman first class? Is that like a private? Anybody in the Navy? Is that right? Is that what it is? And they call it just seaman is a first class is just a basic person. Well, he was having a problem, and they said, you know, you're going to have your appendix out. Then there's not a doctor on a submarine. So all they have is a pharmacist mate is what they called him, which was a lab technician is all it was. And he said, you know, I've seen this done before, and I'm willing to do it. So Wheeler Light says, I'm willing to do that if you want to take a chance. because they were in wartime, so they couldn't do anything. And they said, if you don't do something, you're going to die. So sure enough, they took alcohol out of one of the torpedoes and strained it through a tea strainer somehow. It's what they use as their, anesthetic. And they used just a regular knife from the table for the scalpel and used two spoons to hold everything open while they operated on him. In 13 days, he went back to work. First one ever done, first surgery ever done on a submarine. But Rector, the guy's name, he had to make a choice. Okay, I got faith in you to do this. All right? You've never done it before. You know, that's exactly what God is always talking about. As we're going to see a quote from Oswald Chambers in just a moment. It's amazing how that's what we operate. And God says, you know, you're always looking for a sign. He said, I'm not going to give you one more than you already have in most cases. A demanding faith requires a sign. Then Jesus said to him, unless you see signs. Now, remember, he's talking to a whole audience, a plural audience. It's an aorist second masculine plural. It's not a singular. Even though it's translated singular in the English New Testament, it's plural. And so he's just not talking to this one guy. He says, you know, you're not going to believe. He's talking to the whole crowd that hears him. And I think he's talking to the Galileans. Why? Because they've already demanded that in the past. He said, you're not going to believe me unless you have some great sign, all right? And wonders you will not believe. And he speaks in the plural there, okay? He refers to all those, especially in that area, who have demanded already that he prove himself. You know, we do the same thing with Jesus. If you'll heal my spouse, then I'll commit my life to you. You ever heard that before? Guess what? A lot of times they get healed and they don't. It's no time for, you know, if you look at the stats of what happened in 2000, what we just celebrated, September 11th. If you look at the stats what happened in church attendance right after that and what happened 2 years after that, that's exactly what happened. For all that going on, everybody ran back to church for a little while, but because it was just empty religion, they left again and not there now. Why? Because, God, we want you to do something. We need you now. And then, especially if things get better, but if it gets worse, most of the time people say, well, God, just like that guy in the movie. That's exactly the way people respond. Well, you didn't do what I asked you to, so I'm not going to commit to you. And Jesus pretty much says, okay, you're on your own. And that's exactly what he does throughout the New Testament. Waiting for God is incarnate unbelief. It means that I have no faith in him. If I don't believe him right this second, if I'm going to wait for him to do something, it's just pretty much unbelief. I wait for him to do something in me that I may trust in that. Well, if you prove to me this, then I'll trust you. God will not do it. This is part of Chambers' quote. But because that is not the basis of the God-man relationship. Can you imagine? What about Moses? When he told him to go across, go out there and go ahead and get in the water, and then I'll part the Red Sea. Here's how we handle it. Well, God, if you'll part about 6 feet of it first, then we'll step out there. That's exactly what's going on. That's what happens when someone says, well, God, if you'll heal my child, if you'll fix this, then that's the same thing. It's not that, okay, God, I'm just going to trust you regardless of how this happens. And Abram, the same way, he said, well, you got to tell me where we're going first. No, I'm not going to tell you. So what did it say? It says, Abram believed God, and God counted it to him as what? Righteousness. Why? He said, I don't know, but I'm going to go and do it. Same thing when he promised them a child. You know, he fudged on that because of his wife Sarah, and we got the mess we have in the Middle East because of that today. Man has to go out of himself in his covenant with God as God goes out of himself with his covenant with man. You have to step outside of yourself. You can't reason this out. You can't figure this out. And you can't demand God to do something before you're going to believe. Or he'll just say, you just won't ever believe. Now, he did some signs in the early days, but not as they were requirements from other people. He did those on his own. Whoop. I think we're close over too quick. Okay, yeah, hit it. It is a question of faith in God. The rarest thing. We have faith only in our feelings. Boy, how true is that? Well, I just feel like. And then automatically the picture of Joel Osteen comes up. That's what he's based about. Touchy-feely. And not just him, you know, just so many of them. And it's all about that. It's about emotionalism. It's not about the bare fact that, okay, God, I'm going to trust you regardless of how this thing turns out. I do not believe God unless he will give me something in my hand. He's got to heal somebody in my family. He's got to provide for this. He's got to put something in my hand. Thereby, I may know I have it. Then I say, now I believe. He said, there's no faith there, Oswald Chambers. If you've never seen any of his devotions, you need to pick them up and read them. You can buy them in a cheap book. It's amazing how what kind of insight God gave him a long, long time ago. Look at this one. This is a, you know, the faith chapter in Hebrews, and I'm jumping just two verses. It starts out with, it says, by what? Faith. Abraham, who was Abram before God changed his name to Abraham, it says, by faith. Abram, when he was tried, he offered up his son. And what? Isaac, and that he received the promise, offered up his only begotten son. Going down to verse 30. And all these, having obtained a good report through what? Faith. Received not the promise. It goes on and says, what? Of whom the world is not worthy. Wow. There are many still like that today. People often really want to see miracles or exciting signs and supernatural events before they're willing to believe. It hasn't changed. That's what faith healers are about. You know, if you're wondering, that's the very same thing. Many haunt the meetings of faith healers, so-called, because they want to see whether or not these men or women can actually achieve the transformation of a cripple or open the eyes of the blind. If you ever saw the movie Leap of Faith, it's a great movie. With Martin. You know, he was a shyster. You know, he was performing to be a faith healer, and he was staging all these fakes and making money. But in the end, God healed this boy, and he realized it, that it wasn't the thing. And what happened? He walked away and quit. You know? And, you know, all this nonsense with Benny Hinn and all these guys, just think about it for a moment. If they were really called of God and had the gift of healing, why don't they go to Children's Hospital in Atlanta? You know, why don't they go up there and do so? No, that you got to go, and they're going to have to charge you. You know why? Because it's a fake. That's what it is. You saying what? You don't believe in that somebody has a gift of healing? I'm not saying that it never had, that it's never been the case. I've just never seen it. And those guys, I remember in seminary, one of the guys, he was older than us by a little bit. He would have been already probably in his 50s then, back in the 90s. And was in one of our classes, and he had been in this charismatic movement where he was actually on the team, where they would go all over the country. I mean, a big deal. He would go all over the country, and they were teaching people to talk in tongues, and they were doing all these miraculous things. And you know, he'd been doing that and getting paid for it for years. And he said they came to this one event where he and the other people in his little group had this cripple boy that was in there, and, you know, they were just pressing him, you do this, and you do this, and he said, at that moment, God broke me. He said, this is ridiculous, because he knew it was fake. He walked away from it, and went and started getting a theological education, because he saw all that was a shenanigan. And that's exactly what we have now. Somebody is going to go, and if we can just see God prove himself, then we'll believe in him. In his book, The White Nile, Ellen Moorhead talked about for, 2,000 years, the Nile was running, and everyone was always speculating on, you know, is it going to keep lasting? They didn't have any proof that, you know, next year it would be there. He said the only things they had to go on was either fatalism or superstition to give them security, because they never knew what was, they didn't have any faith in anything real. It was always something man-made. He said it kept going, but they didn't have anything. That's exactly what he says. He says, and that's exactly what's going on. But this guy's saying, you know, I believe he kind of cuts through it. He says, I don't really know all about that. I just need my son healed. So he said, would you come and heal my son? You know, he might not have been one of those religious guys who didn't get caught up in that. So a desperate faith, and that's who this guy is. He's desperate. You know, that's what happens a lot of times. When we get desperate, we kind of do things that we would not have done before. So he's pushing it. He said, sir, I don't really know. And I think this is what's in between lines. He says, Jesus, I don't really know all that. I just need you to come down there and heal my son. That's all I know. So, you know, he is exercising a certain kind of faith, a real low faith in that. Belief that Jesus is sometime a miracle worker. He's heard about it because he comes all the way from Capernaum down to Canaan to see this. So he believes that Jesus, if he'll come and touch his son, that he has something out of the ordinary, but he just knows his son's going to die. So he's desperate. So, and you say, well, does that mean God doesn't work in those situations? Absolutely not. That's not what I mean. A lot of times that's what happens. When you really get desperate, because a lot of times people only respond when they get desperate. But here's the way they go. They'll either turn to God or turn away from him completely. It can go either way in that situation. And this time it turned to the positive for him. The man displays a low initial level of faith, an entry level. Well, I see you can do this. I got that much faith in you. Will you come? You know, I believe you can help me. He feels that everything is going to be lost if Jesus doesn't come. So he said, you got to come down. You got to do this. And Jesus said to him, go thy way. Thy son is living. Again, that translation is not will live. It is living. He is living. And the man believed. Now, did he get a sign? Did he get a sign? No, he didn't get a sign. It says he believed in what? And the Jesus said, and he went on his way. What does that mean? He means you take Jesus at his word. It's the very same word that we have when Jesus said, if you'll trust me, I will take away your sin. The very same thing. No different. No different whatsoever. So he believed it. And he said, believe and you will see. That is, he's moving him up from a lower to a next stage. Okay, you don't have to believe. You don't have to see it. If you'll just believe it, then you will see it. Augustine himself said that, right? Understanding is the reward of faith. Therefore, seek not to understand. Remember in the skeptic in the movie God Must Be Dead, he uses this actual idea. You know, he quotes that in that where he says, oh yeah, no way as a skeptic I can understand. If I just believe first, and that's exactly what Augustine said. He says, therefore, seek not to understand that thou mayest believe, but believe that you can understand. Because what did Paul say in Corinthians? He says, the natural man, the unbeliever, can never understand the things of God. It's impossible. And sometimes you wonder why churches have as much trouble as they have lost people in their leadership positions. So don't be a surprise when they operate totally from a worldly perspective and not a spiritual one. Why? Because they're not even born again. So that's what you have. There's no way they can understand that. Especially when you talk about money and situations like that. They're only going to operate from a business perspective. Why? Because too many of them don't know Christ to start with. That thou mayest understand. Wow. It is a faith that is true faith. And on the ground level of it is what Jesus can do for me and others. Or even what he has done, but who he is. He says, do you believe me who I am? So he believed and he went. The Samaritans, what? We believe you're the Christ. No signs? This kind of man is the one that you can trust who will keep his word. Faith is not intelligent understanding. It is deliberate commitment to a person when you see no way. God, I just don't understand how this thing's going to work out. You know, we put it to the calculator and it just doesn't make any sense. But we're going to believe you anyway. There was a quote and I looked it up and forgot her name. What was it? She was a survivor of one of the death camps during the Holocaust, and they brought her in, and she was talking about all over the world, actually, how Auschwitz, and when she drew it, I mean, at the very last, when she drew it all down to the end, she says, after this, can we still believe? You know, can we still believe in God after this happened to his chosen people? And she goes on, she says, no, no, no. No. And then she starts and she says, but we must. Even when we can't explain everything, we must have faith. That's exactly what this is with him. He must believe. Are you debating whether to take a step in faith of Jesus or wait until you can see how the thing is going to do yourself? Well, God, we'll go across, but you got to part that river first. God, we'll leave Ur of the Chaldees, but you got to tell me where we're going and how we're going to get there. And then we'll go. That's how we operate. Well, God, you got to do this first, and then I'll show my faith after you show me I can depend on you. That's exactly what it is. We're no different than the Galileans, if that's our case. A delivering faith obeys. So the father knew it was at the same hour. Whenever he met his servants, he knew exactly what hour it was. He knew without question that Jesus had healed him that moment. And it made a difference. When we place our faith in the words of Jesus, he does supernatural things. The man and his whole family became believers. There's no greater supernatural event than that. When we simply take Jesus at his word, what is that? It's this word that we have in front of us. You know, I believe that. You hear me say it all the time. It couldn't be any truer if Jesus walked in this place and spoke it himself. It couldn't be any truer than it is right here on this page. Why? Because God's kept it that way for us. Our lives will be transformed, and those around us, your families and the people we work with and people that are around us every day, will be affected by it. He says he's in his household. Surrender is not the surrender of the external life. This is a quote from Chambers as well. Surrender is not a surrender of the external life, but of the what? The will. The will. You know, well, I'm going to do that. That's will. That's determination. When that is done, all the externals follow. Well, you know, I'm going to give up alcohol. The will has to do it first. And then the external is really not a problem. You have all these things wrong in your life, but once you submit your will to Christ, then all those things take care of themselves. Why? Because the will is in submission to Christ. If you go out there and just try to do the external without the will, guess what? In 6 months, you'll be drunk again, or you'll be on dope again, or whatever the deal is. Why? Because you're just doing it in the flesh and external. You're not submitting your will that controls everything. There are very few crises in life. The great crisis is the surrender of the will. But I don't want to do that. That's your will. That's what drives you. I don't want to do that. I want to do that, or I don't want to do that. God never crushes a man's will into surrender. God's not going to make you do anything. Remember what we said a couple weeks ago? You're going to do exactly what your will is. You're going to do exactly what you want to. I'm going to do exactly what my will is. I'm going to do exactly what I want to do. God doesn't make us surrender. He never beseeches us. He waits until we yield our will to him. And once he has our will, guess what? He has everything else. He has our talents and our abilities and everything else. It comes after that. As faith is obedience and submission, so faith breeds obedience, but unbelief leads onto a higher-handed rebellion, Romans chapter 1. They suppress the truth of God in what? Unrighteousness. They didn't believe God and take him as who he was, so they just led to more and more and more rebellion to where he turned them over. Instant obedience is the only kind of obedience there is. Delayed obedience is what? I can tell Meredith to do something. She's not in here, is she? No. Something small. Well, I'm going to do it. And I said, no. Not after you do these other things, now. Why? Because her delayed obedience is what? It's a disobedience. It's the same thing. She'll say, well, I'm going to do it. I said, no. You stop that what you're doing right now and go do that. And it doesn't happen just like that. Because then sometimes I'll say, okay, if I tell you again, and I'll have to threaten her with, you won't ever see this thing again, or whatever it is. That's just how we are, though, right? So when we say, oh, yeah, God, I'm going to do that, but I'm going to wait until, then that's disobedience. Same thing. Just like her. When she said, well, I'm going to do it, but you're not doing it right now, so you're disobeying me. But we don't see it that way, right? Oh, yeah, I'm going to do it. And then we may get around to it in our life. Probably not. To believe is to commit. In the program of mental belief, I commit myself and abandon all that is not related to that commitment. Everything else has to go out. If it's not directly related to what I'm committing to, what are we demanding that Jesus prove before we will commit our life to him? He asked us, his followers, to take him at his word. He said, believe, and I'll give you peace now, and I'll give you a future in eternity with me. Wow. Let's examine what kind of faith our demands place on Christ. Let's pray. Lord, thank you. Thank you for your patience with us. Lord, as oftentimes our level of faith is very weak. Lord, thank you that you're patient with us as it grows. Lord, continue to help us grow in our faith. Thank you for loving us first. Thank you for the truth of your word that will always be here as an absolute. In Jesus' name, we thank you. Amen.